Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Welcome, everybody, to the show. I am thrilled to be joined with Nis Frum today, co-founder of Alpha and tech entrepreneur. Welcome, and is that something I could call you?
Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show, Joe. I'm excited to be having this conversation with you, and I can live with worse titles than that. So we can continue with that.
Perfect. Hopefully, a global leader, and we'll be in there one day. I'd like to think, and I could say I knew him when. So at the start of the show, I always like to do kind of a warm up. So for all of the things, you warm up your legs for a marathon, and you take a couple shots, obviously, before you step into the championship game.
Every morning.
Yeah, exactly. So just like this, for these, I always like to get the juices and the old brain flowing. So going to do some rapid fire questions, kind of Mad Minute style. So awesome. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
I think like better at math.
Better at math is
like
a superpower.
Be able to do equations and just like, be able to knock out a spreadsheet way faster.
That's a hell of a superpower.
The spreadsheet skills. That's a specific, you know, the people who do that, like the hotkeys on the spreadsheets where like you just see the whole spreadsheet form in front of you and they've got all fingers on the keyboard, that capability.
That's awesome. I think that may be a power you would use for evil.
It always appears that way. That's for sure. Or precipitates evil. Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. That's a new one for me. Mac or PC?
Mac.
Good man. Who is your favorite superhero?
Oh, I don't know if I'm really into like superheroes in the Marvel sense. I think in the real world, like Elon Musk, I think he kind of wins in like the real world superhero, closest thing to a Marvel character. It's like the base one off him, Iron Man. But I would say, you know, people that seem to accomplish way more than you would think anyone could accomplish in a single lifetime, that's probably my superhero.
I would definitely agree with that. And I think for most, Iron Man is probably, in terms of the Tony Stark, I'd say Elon is probably the closest embodiment of that. He's, I mean, if you've watched the Joe Rogan podcast with him, he's definitely cooler.
Yeah. Maybe we'll take this podcast in that direction too.
One day, if we move the show's location from New York to say Las Vegas or California, definitely can do that. I'd also like to shoot a car into space at any given point. So
yeah, it could get really interesting on a Friday.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of marketing. Let's just launch products into space. Or if you could live in any sitcom, what would it be?
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Is it counted as a sitcom? I don't know. But I think I'm trying to live that way now. So
the Curb Your Enthusiasm life?
Yeah.
Fantastic. What was the last book you read?
We are all reading at Alpha right now, Crossing the Chasm. So that is very much top of mind.
That's great. Would you recommend it? Any good tidbits from it?
I definitely would recommend it. I recommend entrepreneurs read it sooner than later as well. So in terms of tidbits, it's just fascinating to learn how much different your first few customers look than one later on as your business scales. And so just appreciating those differences and appreciating the evolution that your own organization has to go through to evolve has been really interesting.
That's great. I'll definitely add it to the reading list. And we have a book club here at Yield Street. So that could be our next book.
What's the latest book from Yield Street?
The Culture Code.
Okay, sure. Yeah
it was super interesting. And especially I think anybody that works in the startup space or even beyond that too, larger corporations that have been around for 50 plus years, culture's always such a talked about and a hot button issue. And just to see how that develops over time or could change with leadership or just the direction of the company is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's like the internal crossing the chasm. Like, how do you be proactive about your culture rather than just kind of let it randomly form? It's an interesting separate perspective.
Definitely is. All right, so I think that's going to conclude the Mad Minute for us and the warm-up. I think that took about 5 minutes, so not bad. For listeners that may not be all too familiar with you, do you want to give a brief background on yourself and to the point in your career where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Nis. I co-founded and currently the VP of product at a company called Alpha. We're an on-demand insights platform helping to inform decision makers working in agile environments. So if you think of the lean movement, agile transformations, product teams, those are kind of our customers and that's our world. And so we have given them a platform to help them build better products faster with user insights and market feedback throughout the product development lifecycle. We started the business about 5 years ago. And actually, one of the first things we realized and one of the first things we did was recognize that that market was really early that we were getting into. Agile was still pretty new at a lot of companies. And so similar to what you're doing here, we created a podcast to really educate the market and really kind of evangelize best practices around agile and being customer centric, right? And so we launched a podcast called This is Product Management, which maybe some of your listeners are familiar with as well. And we overlap a little there. But we launched that about 4.5, close to 5 years ago. And we've had since then over 3 million downloads, which is really kind of crazy for a business podcast in a fairly niche market. So it's been wildly interesting to see this market that we're in evolve, where 5 years ago, you know, companies were and product teams were making a lot of decisions based on opinions. And now we see product teams with really advanced workflows and incorporating different customer perspectives and delivering better products to market. And so I think it's the Amazon of everything I've heard it called, and just companies just really obsessed with moving faster, with speed to insight, with being customer centric. And we're happy that we had a small piece in making that happen.
That's awesome. Where were you before you founded Alpha?
That's a great question. So I have been in the startup world since I was 17. I've started, I think, 4 companies before this. And so the company before this one in particular was in the webinar marketing automation space. You'll notice we're here on a podcast and not on a webinar. And I learned that the hard way. The webinar industry did not take off in the way we thought. And our solution, just kind of to the point I just described, we didn't really incorporate customer feedback in the right sort of way. And so unfortunately, that was a miss, but a lot of learnings which helped for this role.
That's fantastic. So it seems like you've been an entrepreneur, or at least had that in your blood your entire life.
I like to say I'm an entrepreneur because I wouldn't do very well with a boss. So I don't really have another choice.
That I think that is definitely a common theme amongst people that start their own companies. And I would never say that you couldn't work for anybody, but it's always better to be your own boss. And especially when you're bringing your own dreams to life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit of a process of elimination.
Definitely. Were you one of those kids that was always, hey, I'm going to have a lemonade stand. Hey, I'm going to sell all like my old toys and flip them. Were you hustling Pokemon cards out in the gym?
My friends have those recollections for sure. Our lemonade stands, we learned if you put them near really long red lights, you can basically harass drivers into buying lemonade they didn't want. So some early dark patterns before those were adopted later by UX across SaaS companies.
That's fantastic. And did you always know you wanted to be in the tech space, or was that just kind of something that you had fallen into?
I think, yeah, the moment I got a computer, I was probably, I don't know, 12 or 13, and just fell in love from there. And it was hard to rip me away from the computer, and that's something I'm still working on to this day. But yeah, definitely think I always knew I wanted to be in tech.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think with technology, it's a really interesting point you brought up about being ripped away from it, because it's such a big part of us. I know in my career, when I started, I was in investment banking and we still had desktops. Mm-hmm. So there was no real, I had a laptop at home. I had one because of college, but it was still clunky. It was like an 18 inch, like Toshiba laptop that weighed 20 pounds. So
yeah, you're like chambered to it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was mostly a desktop anyway. Like, you're not really lugging that thing around. I wasn't the cool kid at the time to have the sleek MacBooks. I have my laptop with me 24/7.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like another organ.
Yeah. On top of your smartphone, your iWatch, and everything else. With that, so how many companies have you started to date?
Yeah. I mean, it depends what you define as a company, but our first company was a web design and marketing consulting company. We actually had to, I think we're probably out of the statute of limitations here. We actually had to like forge our birth dates to get an LLC when we were 17 for that one. So that was the first one. And then a couple that we worked with in college and helping people get off the ground. And then this company, Alpha, I actually started, co-founded shortly after college with a few other folks.
Wow. So you're doing all this while you were a full-time student?
Yeah. Yeah. Night school and then commuting into New York during the day. Yeah. It was definitely an interesting time.
That's incredible. So multitasking is obviously one of your superpowers.
I wish I was better at it, but but yeah, it's again, not too many choices there when you live that way.
But you wouldn't have it any other way.
Exactly.
What are some of the lessons that you've really taken away? You've been doing this since you were 17. So very long time. Well, not that you're old or anything.
No, of course. It has been a while. Yeah, there's so many lessons. I think what's kind of crazy is how important it is to get outside your own head, get outside your own bubble, and go talk to other people. Like, every time I think I'm going through something totally unique, there's certainly unique aspects to it and once-in-a-lifetime aspects to it, but you end up talking to some other entrepreneur, you end up, you know, doing an interview, and someone reaches out, and they're like, I'm going through the same thing. And you realize, like, the whole world is a series of patterns. And the sooner you can recognize and pick up on them, the sooner you can be proactive rather than reactive and kind of anticipate problems ahead of time. So that's been like a really interesting learning, and just surrounding myself with more experienced, smarter people who have gone through this multiple times and being a sponge to whatever advice they have at any given time.
That's really insightful. At any given point, was there a typical time when you may have backed away from or wanted to kind of take a step back and maybe have what, as I'm putting in air quotes here, for the audio show only, that come to Jesus moment of maybe this isn't for me?
Yeah, actually, this entire situation I'm in is kind of a fluke in that regard. After the business we started in college, we had raised close to $250,000 then from friends, family, angels, and even an accelerator and some actual venture funds. And after that experience of just not really nailing what the market needed and getting that off the ground to a substantial extent, I think I was a little bit burned out on the startup scene. And I, you know, at that point, I'd already formed a fairly large network in the startup scene in New York and reached out to a bunch of folks, just telling them, hey, I think I'm looking for, you know, more of a product or marketing sort of role, like on the go-to-market side. And I think I'm looking for a much larger organization where I can just learn from people that have built things at scale. That was kind of the perspective I really wanted to have. And sure enough, like a couple of days later, someone intros me and says, hey, you've got to meet Nick. He's a marketing guy who wants to start a new company. It's like, okay, well, that's exactly not what I said. But it turns out that intro was quite circuitous. And so connected with the founder of Alpha, and we hit it off, and you know, a few months later, we started the business. And so it was really helpful, but not really what I was looking for. So I'm kind of thankful that someone out there didn't listen to what I was looking for and just kind of pushed me in the direction I was meant to go in anyway.
Wow. So you were really looking to pivot and wound up coming full circle. So instead of a 180, just full 360, and you're right back in. You had a Godfather moment of you were out and they pulled you right back in.
Exactly. And I had actually had an offer from a much larger tech organization at that time that I was literally hours away from taking. So just kind of crazy to think back on that and think how closely my life could have gone in a totally different direction.
All from one conversation too.
Yeah, one conversation, one person not reading what I was looking for, but reading into what they wanted for me, I guess. That's been interesting. And obviously, you know, that's happened throughout various points where I think as an entrepreneur, anyone really in tech, you're always kind of at the forefront of something. You're always on the bleeding edge of something. And there's always a lot of ambiguity and discomfort with that. And recognizing like discomfort and the margin is where we learn a lot. But sometimes it does feel like it gets too much. And you kind of just feel like, okay, I'm outside my domain right now. I need to reel it back in. And so that's a constant balance. And that happens all the time to various degrees. I think that though was like a particular moment where I was like, I am done with this.
Yeah, I think we've definitely all had those. But you look back on those times and you couldn't be more thankful for them because they brought you to where you are today.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all a chapter. I think someone described this to me yesterday. It's like multiple chapters in a book. And obviously the book can go in multiple different directions. It's really just about creating enough opportunities and having the mindset to view challenges as opportunities and to say, you know, the chapter you're in might not be great, but how can you at least set it up for the next chapter?
Totally. And so speaking of chapters, our mantra this year at Yield Street and beyond has been realize your next level. So especially for our investors, we're helping them to realize their next level through giving them a different type of investment to generate income for and really help them realize their next level financially, personally, whatever it may be. and on the origination side, same as well. But as you stated, everything is, life is different chapters, and it's a constant state of evolution, or putting it in our Yield Street terms, realizing your next level. And I think you fit that mold entirely, because since 17, or actually since 12 or 13, since you got your first computer, you've just continuously been leveling up in life.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting perspective. And the best advice that I've gotten there, and the best advice I can give, is like, do as much as you can to live in the future. And that doesn't mean like every day trying to get way ahead of yourself, to get way ahead of where you are. But it's really like, take a moment here and there and think like, where do you want to be? And this is something I do. Where do I want to be in 5 years? And that's both forward looking and, you know, backward looking. I think like, where was I 5 years ago? Where was I 6 months ago? What sort of kind of pace am I making right now? Where does that put me 5 years out? And when you start living in the future a little bit, it makes it easier to live in the present, because you know what you're building toward, and you know where your gaps are and where your opportunities are. And so that's something I've thought about a lot. Like, where do I want to live in 5 years? What are the things I want to be doing? What are the things I want to be feeling? And what do I have to do to make that possible? And you start laying the groundwork now. And so I think that's really critical part of kind of leveling up, is knowing what that next level looks like first.
Definitely. Where do you see different skill sets fitting in there? So for example, one of the hot button issues that always gets thrown around and is coding, learning how to code. And obviously, like, we are just joking around that having computers attached to us 24/7 as the industry.
That's living in the future.
Yeah, definitely. So as you look back, what have been some crucial things that you've picked up or had to force yourself to learn over the years? And now looking forward, what are some other skills that you're looking to pick up over the next 5 years to help you reach your next level?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, I think. You know, kind of where I've spent my career, as we've kind of described that detail here, is really in that 0 to 1 phase of getting things off the ground. I'm very comfortable with ambiguity, and I'm very comfortable with vague context and just how do we turn nothing into something. And what I have the opportunity now at Alpha is to really, how do we turn something that's gone 0 to 1 and go scale? And that's been really interesting. I'm learning a lot there. And that's actually kind of uncomfortable for me. Like, how do we build process and do things, anything from like performance reviews to like setting up offices across the country, right? And so those are the things that don't come as naturally to me. And that's where I'm learning a lot. And I think that's really exciting. So 5 years out, you know, this is not going to be the only company I'm a part of for the future. So it's really thinking like, how can I do this better and faster and at scale and make more of an impact on more people, whether they're customers or employees. And so I'm thinking like, this time period right now, learning how to scale this is what I need to learn next. And so I'm very cognizant of that.
What are some things that you consistently do within your routine, whether on daily, weekly, monthly, that just reinforces that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I definitely have a list of, you know, you can call them New Year's resolutions, or just things that don't necessarily come naturally to me at the start of the year that I say I really want to get better at this throughout the year. And so one of those actually is public speaking. It's not something I really enjoy doing. It's not something that really comes naturally to me, but something I've learned when you're scaling a company is you tend to do a lot of it, whether it's internally at the company, not so much public speaking, but just speaking to your teams and your employees and different stakeholders. And then as well, customers and conferences. And that's something I've had to work a lot on. That's an example of just take every opportunity I can and know that the first 6 versions of my speaking are not going to be great. Sorry, Joe and listeners, but
you're doing a fantastic job.
Well, you'll have to listen to some of the other interviews I've done then to appreciate. But you know, it's something that I just recognize I've got to iterate through it, and it's not going to be pretty, but you have to grind through it to get to where you want it to be. And that's true of a lot of things in life, whether it's like personal life, fitness, and budgeting, to like work life, public speaking, coding. Coding definitely has a whole lot of that, where it's pretty ugly for the first few years until you kind of get the hang of it.
Yeah, coding is definitely one of those that it's actually learning a whole new language. So it takes time, effort, and a lot of tripping over your own feet.
Yeah, butchering it first. Yeah,
definitely. But once you get it, it's great.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just the biggest mistake is people thinking that either that grind up front doesn't exist and they think they're just going to be good at something at the start, or thinking that, you know, they don't anticipate and they don't think it's worth it, and they don't realize that's part of the learning. And I think that's so dangerous, because often when we're young, we're like naturally good at some things and just naturally bad at other things. And so people kind of get comfortable with like, I'm good at this, I'm not good at that. And you realize like in life, it doesn't really matter what you're naturally or not naturally good at a certain point. It's more important how quickly you can learn something and how quickly you can embrace the struggle to get there. And so that in and of itself is kind of a key lesson in business, because how many roles exist today that didn't exist 20 years ago? That's only going to continue to happen, right? We're all going to have roles that don't exist that we couldn't have gotten training for, just going to be kind of thrown into it. And we're going to have to figure it out on the fly. And so getting good at that learning process is more important than anything.
I think that's incredible advice just from coming from the space that you and I are in the startup space, mm-hmm. learning new things and just constantly being thrown into really into the fire of, hey, we're going to do this now. You're in charge. And it's like, all right, well, I've really never done that, but I'm going to learn.
Exactly. We're talking on a tech podcast where you're at a company for alternative investments for mainstream investors, right? We couldn't have been talking about this 15 years ago on this medium about this topic.
No, not at all. We would have gotten laughed out of 9 out of 10 rooms that we entered.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of the point, but that's only going to continue to happen in 10 years. If we knew what we'd be talking about in 10 years, we'd laugh about it now. But that's the expectation we have to have.
Absolutely. And I want to go back to you mentioning public speaking for a minute, because I found that really interesting, given you're a leader. You were assuming constantly in front of people on a day-to-day basis and essentially doing public speaking all the time. You have how many people at Alpha that report into you? You started other companies. And like you said, you're continuously going to meetings or doing lectures or panel discussions. So that's actually one of those things that I think is just phenomenal, that you yourself think, I want to be a better public speaker. And that you've just been working on that, when to me, you're very polished. So that's awesome. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It definitely, I can promise you, did not start that way. I think kind of what that all comes down to is creating forcing functions. And those work really well in a company, as a leadership team's great forcing functions for certain sorts of behaviors and certain sorts of KPIs and workflows, but it's really important in your own life as well. So one of the things I get uncomfortable about public speaking right before I do it, but 6 months out, I'm not that uncomfortable. So I'll just say yes to basically every conference or speaking opportunity and then just force myself to figure it out.
I think I was very much like that in college, and especially with all the group presentations and whatever, but I was fortunate enough that in high school, we had to give a lot of group presentations as well. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of beaten into you over time that just, you're going to have to get up in front of a class, in front of your peers and professors and present. And by the time in college senior year thesis rolled around and I had to do my thesis defense, it was good. And it's definitely serving well, but that was definitely something that your palms get a little sweaty and you're rehearsing and you just want to go and you flow. But I think you have to find your own style as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's important to iterate through that. When I was younger, I think I avoided it a lot. I would defer to other people. If I was on a team of two, I asked the other person to speak. I don't have that choice so much anymore. So I've kind of forced myself, but just trying to grind through it again, kind of what you did earlier in your career, I'm going through now.
Yeah. And it's working, and I'm sure it's only going to get better as well. So
trust the process.
Absolutely. And it definitely revolves around your comfort zone with anything, whether it's public speaking or any of the skills that we've really talked about, is it's continuously challenging yourself to be uncomfortable. And that's
how you redefine your comfort zone. Yeah,
definitely. And I'm sure you probably feel that itch more so. How often do you look around, and if you're comfortable, you probably get a bit nervous of like, why am I so comfortable at this moment? I have to be doing something else.
Absolutely. I think if you're either growing or you're receding. There isn't a static in this world anymore.
100%. And it's really interesting. I think a lot of people transition, and something that maybe you could talk about for the audience, what the startup world is actually like, because for me, I came from very corporate companies before diving in. This is my third startup now. I always tell people, I'm like, I don't think I could ever go back to another company, or like a more corporate type company, just for the simple fact that I thoroughly love the chaos of it all. Yeah. And I'm not saying that
there's no other way to describe it.
it's not that it's a chaotic organization, but it's just so fast paced and there's so much going on, because you are literally building organizations from the ground up, and you get to see that initial growth instead of just being thrown into a machine as a small cog that's been moving at a slow but steady pace for 50 years.
Yeah, I describe it kind of similarly. Like, you're in a large organization, it can only get so bad, it can only get so good. Let's say it ranges from 3 to 7. If you're in a startup though, you go from 1 to 10, and it's every single day, right? Like, if something goes wrong, not too many people to blame. They'll know if it's your fault. And if something goes right, similarly, not too many people to take credit. They're like, they'll know it's you. And so your opportunity to make an impact, either positively or negatively, on a daily basis is just profound. And that's energizing. It's exciting. It's scary, but you definitely get addicted to it.
Yeah, it is an addiction, because it's a constant adrenaline rush.
Oh yeah.
And you just can't get enough of it. And I think that's why you do have these serial entrepreneurs out there that just continuously are just starting up company after company after company, because that's what they love doing. And it's just an addiction at that point. A positive addiction.
Yeah, hopefully it gets a little easier over time. That's an optimistic thought.
Definitely. It's always funny talking to entrepreneurs. I'm sure you have your own feelings as well compared to others. But the one CEO of a coffee company I follow, he was actually a Green Beret before starting the coffee company.
Oh, yeah.
Before starting the coffee company. And in his interviews, he's like, I would rather go through their selection process for the Green Berets over and over and over again than have to start this company again.
Yeah, it's the things you can't unsee. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And I was just like, wow, that is a really extreme example, but it's very telling of what the blood, sweat, and tears in the process is like of starting your own business.
Yep. Absolutely. It's a lot more days where it's like a 1 on the scale of 1 to 10 up front. And then over time, it starts evening out a little bit more on the 10.
That's great. So I want to spend a few minutes talking about kind of where you see the future of the entrepreneur and the startup space and the tech space really going. We are in a new decade after all.
Yeah. I think I have an interesting perspective from Alpha and from the customers we have here, which are, you know, some of the largest and leading brands in the world. And so I think there's one thing that definitely has to happen, which is that customers, their expectations are continuously rising. We're all customers, we're all consumers in one aspect of our lives, and then, you know, vendors on the other side, right? And companies on the other side, right? And so I think our expectation as consumers is increasingly going up, and we don't like to see the seams from the companies we pay for. We don't like to get one message from marketing and then another product delivered to us. We want a consistent, cohesive experience end to end. And so I think that's something that anyone building a company has to really think about. Like, are they building a bunch of siloed departments, or are they building an end-to-end experience for customers? And how do you deliver that? How do you build a company that can deliver that? How do people who are never going to meet each other within your organization at a certain size, how do they still collaborate and not step on each other's toes and maintain the same message across the company? I think that's really important. And then that actually internally too, we can kind of close the loop on the conversation that way, you know, crossing the chasm with your customers, but also the culture code internally. Like, how do you build an employee-centered company, right? Because the economy is great right now, and the war for talent is probably unlike anything we've ever seen before right now. And it's incredibly difficult to hire great and high performing talent, right? And so there's only so many ways you can differentiate with old school tactics. Today, it's about building a company that's really employee centric, that keeps employees in mind and creates a cohesive end to end employee experience, just like we're trying to do for customers. We're trying to do that internally for people who join our company and want to move up, and they have aspirations and career pathing that they want to go through. And so I think building a company that works for those stakeholders, like, that's the only choice we're going to have in the future, is to build an organization that works both ways and creates those sort of experiences.
That's a fantastic outlook.
Yeah, it's not easy to do, but we're starting with the level we want to get to.
You made it sound easy. You put it in a way that sounds attainable. I like that.
Step one.
Step one, and now there's only 50 more after. Enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like getting a dresser from IKEA. Yeah,
exactly. except they don't send you the instructions or the tools.
Yep. There's no manual that comes with it, but there are missing parts or extra parts.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is the point in the show where, as we mentioned about realizing your next level and the constant state of evolution, you're somebody who continuously strives to reach your next level. This is the point in the show where I want to give you the opportunity to recognize somebody or a group of individuals that's inspired you both professionally and personally to realize your next level.
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to shout out to my fiance. I mean, it's not playing it safe. I'll explain. So she, she kind of recognized, I mean, we met in college and she saw the kind of the world I was living in and what I was trying to do professionally. And she noticed a gap that I didn't notice, which was I was iterating and learning and growing professionally, but not really so much in my personal life. And that was related to, you know, just fitness and personal relationships and all that sort of stuff. And she said, you know, she encouraged me to just apply the exact same principles from the work world to my personal world, and has helped me in many, many different ways through the years. But in particular, a couple of years ago, I actually lost 50 pounds by, you know, the same sort of resolutions, counting calories, working out. I got a Peloton. This is not an ad for Peloton, but it could be, and all that. And so actually reinforced a lot of what I did in my professional life. And I kind of learned from applying my professional life to my personal life and then back to my professional life. So I don't think I could be where I am without her in many, many ways, but in this one in particular. And so I'm going to give the shout out to her.
That's an awesome story, and congratulations on the weight loss. That's That's incredible. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was quite a journey in and of itself.
Always the significant others that really help us and truly are the rocks by our sides, which is fantastic. Absolutely. And especially for those that get involved with somebody in the startup space, or God forbid, both of you are in the startup space, you 100% need each other all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little surreal.
Totally. So Nis, where can everybody find you? Instagram, Twitter, and if you have a book coming out, definitely plug that as well.
No book yet, but fortunately I have a fairly unique name. So it's Nis Frohm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. My website is nisfro.me. I don't have a lot of competition in that regard. That's where people can find me. And I look forward to connecting with anyone who's listening.
Definitely looking forward to it. And thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Joe. I enjoyed the conversation.
You got it. Take care. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7-10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.